Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Jill Robbins and Brian Lynn. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, Britain and the United States have opened exploratory talks on a trade agreement. Such an agreement would take effect after Britain officially leaves the European Union. The withdrawal, known as Brexit, is set for March 29th. Sharp differences have arisen between British and U.S. officials over agricultural issues. Britain is resisting U.S. demands to open its markets to farm products currently banned under EU law. The most widely reported example is Europe's import ban on American chlorinated chicken. In the United States, the meat processing industry washes chickens in chlorine to remove harmful bacteria. Europe says that an overdependence on chlorine lowers overall production and cleanliness on poultry farms. U.S. officials are disputing the claim. The European Union has also banned imports of meat from American cows that have been treated with artificial growth hormones. Natural hormones control growth in animal or plant cells. American farmers use artificial hormones to increase the size of animals or to increase milk production. But EU officials warn that one commonly used growth hormone may cause cancer. They add there is not enough scientific information on other hormones to approve their use in food. U.S. officials have made it clear that any future trade deal with Britain must see these food bans dropped. Former U.S. lawmaker Daryl Issa is President Donald Trump's choice to lead the U.S. government's Trade and Development Agency. Issa says that the millions of Britons visiting the United States every year enjoy perfectly safe food.
We'd like to have that arrangement be one in which in Britain, you can choose to have American chicken, American beef, or other agricultural products, just as you could when you come to the United States. It is a key linchpin of an agreement. Financial, manufacturing, and agriculture has to be free and fair.
The U.S. ambassador to Britain, Woody Johnson, recently wrote about the issue in Britain's The Telegraph newspaper. He attacked what he called myths over American farming, claiming they are part of an effort to protect the interests of British farmers. Britain has repeatedly said that it will not lower food quality rules after it leaves the EU. In answer to Ambassador Johnson's comments, British International Trade Minister Liam Fox said his country would not compromise. Fox spoke to the British Broadcasting Corporation.
Will we accept things that we believe are against the interests of our consumers or our producers? No, we won't. It's a negotiation.
The dispute over American meat imports is also influencing debate over the Irish border, a major issue in Britain's attempt to cancel its EU membership. British and EU officials want to avoid border inspections between Northern Ireland, which is part of Britain, and the Republic of Ireland, an EU member state. Irish Prime Minister Leo Varadkar, recently expressed fears that the border could open a back door into the EU. In other words, EU members might import products that fail to meet their food safety requirements. Varadkar told reporters, if at some point in the future the United Kingdom were to allow chlorinated chicken or beef with hormones into their markets, we wouldn't want that coming into our markets or the European Union as well. The United States says a trade deal would help British industries, like financial services. And Britain appears interested in strengthening its position in the post-Brexit world as an international trading power.
Jacqueline Landaverde, age 17, hopes to study political science and law in college. Kevin Palma, also 17, wants to become a doctor. The two young people are in their final year of high school. They were born in the United States, so they are U.S. citizens. But their parents are not. They moved here from El Salvador under the Temporary Protected Status Program, or TPS. They could live and work legally in the United States for a short period of time while their homeland was dealing with natural disasters or political problems. The TPS program did not offer immigrants a way to become U.S. citizens or live permanently in the country. In September 2017, the Department of Homeland Security said it would end the program for 6 of 10 protected countries. More than 400,000 immigrants from El Salvador, Haiti, Honduras, Nepal, Nicaragua, and Sudan would lose their legal guarantees. In October 2018, a judge stopped the Trump administration from ending the TPS status for immigrants from Haiti, Nicaragua, El Salvador, and Sudan. The Department of Homeland Security announced on March 1st that the TPS will continue for these four countries until January 2nd, 2020. A separate court case stopped orders to expel about 57,000 Honduran and 9,000 Nepali TPS holders. Both Landaverde and Palma think their lives will change a great deal if their parents are forced to return to El Salvador. It would probably end their dreams of going to college. Palma spoke to VOA. When it struck me was about 2 years ago in 2017, when I was actually told the consequences that would happen. Basically, family separation. I would have to stay here. I'd have to get a full-time job to take care of my siblings. Landaverde's situation is the same. As the oldest child in her family, she too would have to get a job and take care of her three brothers and sisters. She is shocked that this situation may come about. Growing up, I never knew. I just knew protection, and my parents were legal in this country. We heard these rumors. TPS is going to be canceled. Landaverde said she spoke with her parents. They gave a brief explanation and said, "It has kept us here in this country." But she really understood the problem when she did her own research. She found the Massachusetts Temporary Protected Status Committee. The group organizes demonstrations and meetings and sends information to TPS holders. VOA met with both high school students and their friends in Bethesda, Maryland, at the Imagination Stage Theater. There, they and 11 other children performed The Last Dream, a project from the Boston Experimental Theater. In the show, children of TPS recipients tell their real-life stories.
Jackie, they hate us. They don't want us here anymore. Do you not understand that? Next year, none of us are going to be here to celebrate for Sophia. None of us.
Beth Brooks Moano watched the play. She felt thankful that the children shared their stories and said that she left with a new understanding. The play was part of a three-day series of events. Thousands of TPS holders came to Washington, D.C. to talk with U.S. lawmakers and ask for a way they could become permanent residents. Democratic Party activists like the idea of helping TPS holders stay. Most Republicans are against the idea. There are seven cases in court related to the Trump administration stopping the TPS program. Performances of The Last Dream are continuing across the country. Palma and Landa Verde should learn about their request to attend college in a month or two. I'm Jill Robbins.
The world's top automakers are increasingly offering more electric vehicle models as they steadily back away from gasoline engines. This growth is expected to continue, with more people choosing to hit the road with clean-running electric-powered cars. Environmentalists have praised the automakers for taking major steps to limit harmful pollutants linked to worldwide climate change. But electric vehicles are also known for not producing another kind of pollution, noise. They run on batteries instead of fuel and can operate in silence. While many people might consider this a good thing, quiet cars can also cause problems. The main danger is that people walking in areas around electric vehicles face a greater risk of being hit if they cannot hear the cars coming. Governments in the United States and Europe have recognized this problem. So, they have set requirements for manufacturers to add warning sounds to vehicles operating on electricity. The U.S. Department of Transportation finalized its rules a year ago. The rules require electric and hybrid vehicles to be equipped with some kind of warning sound when moving at speeds up to 30 kilometers per hour. The rules are aimed at preventing injuries among people walking or riding bicycles and to protect the blind. An official from Mercedes-Benz said the company had developed a noise for its new EQC model. The official said the sound was designed to provide a safe warning without annoying passengers inside the vehicle. Developer Jochen Herrmann said the goal was to create a car that remains completely quiet on the inside, but fills the sound requirements and supports the model's image on the outside. It might seem strange to think that part of our automotive future is currently being developed in the same kinds of recording studios used by musicians. But that is exactly what is happening. Listen to the sound Nissan created in 2017 in an attempt to make one of its future electric models sing. Mercedes-AMG offers its buyers high-performance vehicles that combine modern design with speed and power. The head of Mercedes-AMG, Tobias Moers, told Reuters that the company decided musical influences could help define how its future electric cars are heard. He said AMG is currently working with the American rock band Linkin Park to find exactly the right artificial sound. A representative from BMW Group said the sound is being developed for one of its vehicles, a new electric Mini. Esther Bana, Vice President of Strategy and Innovation at BMW's Mini, said sound is something that will greatly shape the car's identity. Michael Pfadenhauer is head of sound development for German sports car maker Porsche. He told the company's official magazine that finding the right sound for a sports car can be very tricky. "There is no E sound. It has to be invented," he said. Pfadenhauer added that different sounds will be needed at low and high speeds to help drivers experience the potential of high-performance electric sports cars. American manufacturer Harley-Davidson recently launched its first fully electric motorcycle called Livewire. The company is known for building large, powerful bikes with huge, loud motors. Here is what Harley's sound development team created for its electric model. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. In March of 1868, Congress tried to remove President Andrew Johnson from office. But the Senate failed in the effort by one vote. Andrew Johnson was a Democrat. Congress was controlled by radical members of the Republican Party. Most of the charges at Johnson's trial were based on his dismissal of the Secretary of War. A new law said the president could not remove a cabinet officer without Senate approval. Johnson said the law was unconstitutional. The trial was an important turning point in the making of the nation. Removal from office would have established the idea that the president could serve only with the approval of Congress. The president would have become, in effect, a prime minister, requiring the support of Congress to remain in office. Andrew Johnson's victory kept alive the idea of an independent presidency. Although Congress failed to remove him, the vote did not end a conflict with the White House over the future of the South. But it did have an effect on efforts to rebuild the South following the war. Radical Republicans wanted to punish the South for starting the war. They also wanted to be sure new governments in the southern states would support the Republican Party. Doug Johnson and Frank Oliver tell about the Reconstruction of the South.
One way radical Republicans gained support
was by helping give blacks the right to vote. They knew former slaves would vote for the party which had freed them. Another way Republicans kept control in the South was by preventing whites from voting there. They passed a law saying no Southerner could vote if he had taken part in the rebellion against the Union. This prevented the majority of Southern whites from voting for Democrats and against Republicans.
Congress also made strong rules about what Southern states had to do to re-enter the Union. It said each of the states needed a new constitution that protected the voting rights of all black men. And it said each Southern state must approve an amendment to the United States Constitution that gave citizenship to blacks. The radicals did not rest with changes in the law. They also sent their supporters south to organize blacks for the Republican Party. Many Southern whites hated these men from the North. They had a special name for them, carpetbaggers. The name arose because many of the Northerners who went south arrived with all their possessions in a carpet handbag. Southerners also had a name for their own people who cooperated with the carpetbaggers. They called them scalawags. Neither name was friendly.
Southern whites had a reason to be bitter. They had lost the Civil War. Now much of their power was gone, and they were suffering. But there was another side to the story as well. Southern whites had held black people in slavery for many years. Now the former slaves were getting to enjoy a small taste of freedom. Also, the South had started the Civil War, which had caused so much death and destruction. It was not surprising that the North showed little sympathy when the fighting stopped and the South lay in ruins. Southern states organized conventions to form new governments. Soon, all but three Southern states had new legislatures. Not surprisingly, radical Republicans held firm control in every one of the new governments. Many of the new governors and state officials were carpetbaggers from outside the state. Others were Southern scalawags.
Many of these new state officials were dishonest. They began using their power to become rich. In South Carolina, for example, the new governor was a former army officer from the state of Ohio. He gave government jobs to many dishonest men, including some who were wanted for crimes in other states. The same situation existed in other state governments in the South. In Louisiana, for example, the governor was a carpetbagger from the state of Illinois. He left office after 4 years with $1 million. His official pay during that time was only $32,000.
The South was not the only place where public officials were dishonest. The period after the Civil War in the United States was marked by several famous incidents involving violations of the public trust. Some of these incidents took place in the North, even in the White House. They were among the worst examples of dishonesty and poor government ever to take place in American history. It also is important to note that not everyone in the South was dishonest. The new state governments did many good things. They built roads and bridges, schools and hospitals.
They improved transportation and education. They loaned money to companies to build railroads. Most important, they helped give hope to former slaves. These people were struggling to create a new life in the land of their former owners.
So the record of Reconstruction in the South was mixed. Many Southerners believe, even today, that Reconstruction was a bitter time of defeat. But others now say this period after the Civil War was a necessary step in creating a different kind of South from the one which had existed before. Historians do agree that Reconstruction changed the United States in several important ways. One of the most important changes was in the Constitution. Congress passed 3 historic amendments to the Constitution during this period.
The first was the 13th Amendment. It ended slavery in the United States. The next was the 14th Amendment. It said, all persons born or naturalized in the United States were citizens of the United States and of the state in which they lived. It said no state could limit the rights of these citizens. Finally, there was the 15th Amendment. It said, a citizen of the United States could not be prevented from voting because of his color. The 13th Amendment freed all Negro slaves. The 14th and 15th Amendments were supposed to protect their rights. These laws alone, however, did not succeed in doing this. It would take another century until Martin Luther King and other civil rights leaders to make these rights a reality. Yet the passage of these 3 amendments to the Constitution was still a historic step in making blacks full and equal citizens.
These same laws and other actions of the radical Republicans changed the South in other, less desirable ways. They helped cause angry whites to form the Ku Klux Klan and other groups that terrorized blacks for years to come. The laws also increased bitterness between the North and South that lasted many years. Reconstruction changed the economy of the South, too. White landowners broke up their big farms into smaller pieces of land. They rented these to black farmers. With the land came seed, tools, and enough supplies for a year. In exchange for this, the owner would get a large share of the crop raised by the tenant farmer. This system, called sharecropping, spread through the South. It lasted for almost 100 years. Sharecropping made it possible for blacks to work the land for themselves for the first time in their lives. But it also made it difficult for them to earn enough money to improve their condition. As a result, the majority of Southern blacks remained in poverty. The system helped cause the South to be the poorest part of the United States for many years.
The Reconstruction period changed the face of the South and the United States. The events of Reconstruction also were central to one of the nation's most interesting presidential elections.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.